Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Since 2008, Hardin Coleman has served as the dean of the Boston University School of Education. He's stepping down at the end of this year and will return to teaching. Coleman spent decades as a teacher, counselor, and administrator. He's also vice chair of the Boston School Committee, so he's got a deep and nuanced view of how education is changing at a time when the demand for change in K through 12 education grows ever louder. Dean Coleman joins us now in the studio. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much.
So, Dean Coleman, I first wanted to run a couple quotes by you in regarding this idea of change in education and the call for innovation and disruption, which is something we've been hearing a lot of in recent years. There's a group called the XQ Project, and they're trying to design a super school, a new school, a new type of high school. And they say that we've gone from the Model T to the Tesla, from the switchboard to the smartphone, yet high school has remained frozen in time. So they go on and say, we need to scrap the blueprint and revolutionize this dangerously broken system. And I think that's pretty emblematic of people who want to radically innovate K through 12 public education. So my first question for you is, do you agree with that line of thinking? Are we in need of radical disruption?
The phrase radical disruption is one that I don't really understand all the time. I don't know what it means. Certainly we have to change. Certainly there's problems. We have to correct. But my boss, Bob Brown, says a vision without a financial plan is an hallucination. And so one of the things that prevents rapid change in the educational system is that we're not financing it adequately. So if I'm in a business and I'm facing challenges in my in the way in which I approach work, so Tesla's an example, you know, I can recruit significant finances to build a better engine, build a better model, put the prototype out there and get it going in a way that we don't have access to that type of capital in the educational system. So our changes are more gradual, but we have to focus and be consistent and look for how we can improve.
Do you think that there has been a lack of innovation in the past generation in K through 12 education?
No, I think there's a huge amount of innovation in education all the time. I think one of our strengths is that we're innovating in very many different ways. We're creating new curriculum. We're responding to needs of children. We're trying to figure out how advances in learning science can be applied to what we do in classrooms. We change the way we train teachers. We increase the clinical hours. The whole issue with the growing autonomy of schools, particularly in Title I areas, where we're providing increasing autonomy to schools, whether that's been in hiring and choosing curriculum. We do a lot of great innovation throughout the field of education. Our challenge, I think, is replicating and taking that to scale. So you may have great innovation in a particular school. So you look at what happened in Orchard Gardens or the Trotter in Boston. Mm-hmm. Great change. People took on challenges and met them very well. But how then do you make sure that in the system you can replicate that in other schools and bring those changes to scale? I think that's a bigger challenge in education than innovation.
So, I mean, you mentioned Orchard Gardens and the Trotter. So let's talk about, let's just use Boston as an example of the challenges of bringing to scale. What do you think are the challenges within the Boston public schools of doing exactly that?
Well, one of the things is creating how do we find, we can identify the protocols that certain schools use that have been very successful. I give this example in Boston, the Edvester's annual prize for the school on the move, where we have schools that are succeeding beyond the average for the district. There's six elements in each of those schools that we know works. And then how do you get the type of principals and bring the teachers together that will then look at what other people are doing and try to replicate that? So it's an adult learning process, both at the central offices in terms of expectations and also in the local schools in terms of other people saying, I can look at that and replicate it. One could argue in the medical field, and there's some dispute about this, you're given permission to create a new practice, and then once you've demonstrated its empirical success, you can then, other people have to replicate that practice in order to continue the work. That's not a system that exists in the educational system, whether public, private, or charter.
So what's stopping it from existing? I mean, I'm trying to understand, if we have the tools that have worked in other sectors to scale up successful innovation. Mm-hmm. What are the impediments? I mean, is it just habit? Is it tradition? Is it the workforce in education? What is it?
That's a great question. Leadership is a difficult art across any organization. And so finding principals who are willing to do the consistent, steady work over time of building a group of faculty in your school that is focused on what the needs of students are, building a community, adult learning community, getting the time to focus on collaborative work is very difficult to do. And I think that's the impediment to scaling up some of the successes we're having in Boston. In particular, changing the working conditions within the schools, providing more collaborative time. That takes a lot of cultural adult change. And as we know, it's hard to put the right incentives in place or the right conditions in place to really reward that change. And that's one of the things that we have to work on.
Yeah. So let me ask you, because you mentioned charter schools. And, way back when, it's so political now, mm-hmm. but way back when, the idea behind charter schools was that they would be incubators of innovation and new ideas and new best practices, and that then the district schools would replicate those successes. And we were looking back at a report from State Auditor Suzanne Bump from 2014, and she issued this report on the State Department of Elementary and Secondary Education's oversight of charter schools. And there's a lot in that report, which we've talked about before, but there was a particular graph which I wanted to share with you, because she found that the Department of Elementary and Secondary Ed has not adequately documented that it has facilitated these practices of scaling, essentially, between charters and the district schools. Nor has it taken action to broadly disseminate charter school innovative best practices information itself since 2009. So my question is, we had the opportunity as a state to do exactly what you're talking about, have incubators, new best practices, and then actively spread them through schools throughout Massachusetts. But even then, in writing a law, we fail to create the mechanism to do that. So, how much responsibility in this case does lie with the state?
I think the state has some responsibilities. Local school districts have some responsibilities. The charter school ed reform movement has some responsibilities. So I think there are examples, though. So we had the Compact here in Boston, which is an organization that's facilitating the conversation between parochial schools, public schools, and charter schools that are focused on serving Title I kids to talk about exactly how we can look at each other's best practices and figure out how to replicate that in our schools. So, for example, one of the things that we know that works very well that charter schools have demonstrated is, and I think it's the big gift from charter schools, is that all kids can learn. That was not a philosophy that was governing our practices and our behavior in schools across the United States in any situation, that poor kids, particularly kids from disadvantaged backgrounds, can be put in situations that learn. So once we see that happening, we're all more motivated to see how we can replicate those conditions. We also see that when you give school leaders autonomy in hiring and time for the adults in the building to collaborate around the implementation of their curriculum to meet the needs of the kids, you see improved growth in scores. As you encourage teachers to go have high expectations for kids and high support, those are the conditions that lead to radical improvement in performance. And you're beginning to see that. And the charter schools were good models for doing that. The public schools are seeing that happen. You have some crossover of staff where people will be working in a charter school, come work into the public school and bring those practices with them and those observations. So it's not a universal process, but when you see the common practices across those conditions, you do see that the charter school movement has some real value, and we are replicating some of their practices.
So, in that case, let me just ask you, are you in support of question two?
Question two, as an educator, one of the things that we worry about the most state or federal legislations that provide opportunities without a financial model. So question two has no financial model for how it's going to be implemented in a way that will serve all kids in our system. So for example, if we grow the number, if we lift the cap of charter schools in Boston, the process is that the charter schools will get the average cost per student that we're paying in the district. Well, they then don't get the same level of high needs students, so that the cost that the high needs students will stay with the district. They're going to get a lower need student, so that, but they're going to get the same amount of money. So if we had a weighted, if the question two included a weighted student formula, where the money for the needs to educate a kid, whether it's a has a early language learner or a child with high special needs, and we weight the formula like they do in California as a state, then we could support raising the cap, because the district will not lose the money it needs in order to educate the kids who will stay in the district. Another example is the state said they were going to have a step-down funding for as people go to the charter schools, that the public schools would still receive funding each year at a step-down basis. Well, that's not being funded.
Mm-hmm.
And the third issue for Boston is that the public school system is responsible for providing transportation to all the charter schools, and the charter schools have to be citywide choice.
Mm-hmm.
So as you know, one of the big financial burdens for the district is transportation.
Yeah.
And so lifting the cap will increase that cost that's not going to learning.
Yeah. So I guess my final question then is, we could talk for a lot longer about the core question of innovation and spreading innovation through education. But do you think that that is even the right conversation to be having in public education? Because I wonder, there are a lot of people who say, no, what we ought to be doing is looking even deeper and saying, if there are core structural problems in education, it's that that districts have been unequally funded and that we still have inequities in terms of race and class, concentration of privilege. And these are all things that flower in education, but it has more to do with our society as a whole.
I would agree. That back to the comment I made earlier. We need a financial model that is organized to provide a high-quality education for all children, regardless of the circumstances. And we don't have that financial model. We have a wide variety of we have very local-based financing, and so that's inadequate to the task of serving all our children.
Well, Hardin Coleman is dean of Boston University School of Education. He's vice chair of the Boston School Committee. He's stepping down as dean from BU's Ed School this year. Thank you so very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.